In 1969, you're keeping score historically, two important documents came out of Ottawa. The first was a white paper that said the problem with Indians is that they're Indians. We should take away legal status. And that way, everyone in an era infused with civil rights enthusiasm from the United States would be the same. And this would be progress. And the response was an amazing backlash, and an organized one. In that same year, there was a parliamentary task force that said the problem with farming is that there are too many farmers, and the best thing we can do is get rid of most of them, ease them off the land. My grandfather and my uncle would have been in that number. They didn't farm on a scale respectable enough for the banks. But I find that juxtaposition in 1969 to be interesting. So, fourth thing, I'm committed both philosophically and practically as a matter of living here. Committed to the proposition that somehow, despite differences in worldview and experience and all of those things, settler and Aboriginal peoples can't be imagined as such airtight opposites that one cannot understand the other, that their ways of thinking are so incommensurable, so unintelligible one to the other, that they can't get it. I think this is especially true for settler people. It's important that we do get it, some of it. And that we draw on all of our resources, our own stories, our ability to listen, our relationships, in order to get it. It's important that we retell our own story, our own being here, in ways that is entangled with the history of the Cree, with the history of the Cheyenne for me. Not to romanticize, to entangle, to move past solitudes. Somehow it's important that we get some of it, and I think we can. Daniel Coleman, who's a professor at McMaster University, who's been here a couple of times, introduced me to the idea of uncommon ground. Let's imagine that's what we're doing today. Not common ground, not sameness. The uncommon ground that is uncomfortable and risky and unsettling and maybe transformative. The ground on which the familiar gets disrupted, and maybe Janice has done a bit of that already, where we have to pay close attention, where we might need new words to describe what we have heard. Uncommon ground. So let me close with a couple of stories, because it is important to me that we get it, and that the conversation that follows today is not a defensive one, but an uncommon one. In that classroom, I was pointing to G20-something, because I could never, again, figure out which one it was. I assume they're still there. I was teaching a class one day on Aboriginal politics in Canada. And in one of those inspired moments you have as a teacher that could either go very wrong or can work, this one worked. I turned to Robin, a student at the back row, and said, "Robin, how long has your family been in Canada?" She said, "Three generations, all on one farm out east of St. Paul." And I said to Robin, "Tell us about that land. Tell us about your family." And she talked about it in ways, because we were talking about land, in ways that suggested that her sense of who she was and all the stories that informed who she was and her identity was wrapped up in that farm. And she spoke about it in a way that caused Barney, the pig Ann from Treaty 7, we let Treaty 7 people come up occasionally, that told Barney, well, Barney, people's in the cartoons, people's mouths drop. Rarely happens in real life. Barney's mouth dropped. He didn't understand, he'd never heard someone articulate a sense of identity, a sense of storiedness, a storied placeness like that. And from that point on in the term, Robin and Barney were best buds. They didn't get everything about each other, but they got something about each other. There was a bridge. Let me tell you one last story, because it's a great one. In Saskatchewan, along the North Saskatchewan River, not far from Fort Carleton, there's a little triangle of land with a hill on top of it called Stony Hill or Stony Knoll. It was set aside under Treaty 6 for a band called the Young Chippewyan Band that never took up or didn't immediately take up residence there. The band was adapting to a post-Buffalo economy. It went through a succession of leaders. It hadn't settled yet. And in 1897, the federal government took it back without consent, not even the consent required under the Indian Act, and instead made it available to settlers, German Lutheran, German Mennonite settlers, immigrants. Members of the Young Chippewyan Band were relegated to the status of squatters in other communities, Red Pheasant, other places around North Battleford. But that dispossession was the source of grievance that never went away. When I was in high school, I remember hearing stories, because I had friends from that district, of young Chippewyan, young men who would turn up with their trucks on people's, on farmers' land and say, "This is our land." And it felt a bit menacing and threatening. And you can imagine the first reactions. There was no one here when we came. We made something of it. Fear and disbelief. Well, I don't know the whole story of what happened over the next 30 years, but it came to a decisive and interesting point. Not an end, not a closure, but an interesting place. In August of 2006, 130 years to the day after the signing of Treaty 6 at Fort Carleton, when settler and Cree descendants gathered on Stony Knoll for a pipe ceremony, a feast, a signing of a declaration of harmony and justice that said, "We are all treaty people." Together they committed to work so the Young Chippewyan could have a land base, so that their claim could at last be resolved. Lots of lawyers have got rich on it already. And so that future generations could live in peace and with sufficiency for all. So they made uncommon ground at the top of that hill where a Lutheran church once stood. They erected a teepee. Together they prepared the food. They smoked the pipe. They told jokes so that gentle humor could ease the tension. They exchanged gifts. The Mennonites made a quilt, of course. And they gave thanks to the Creator. And in the words of one of those participants, "We settlers are unsettled on our own land. We don't know the language. We don't know the liturgy. But we recognize the love, the respect for land. The prayers, the drums, the singing carry us into the day, to two communities step over risk and embrace stories, losses, strength, and dreams. Hope is in the hearts and hands of those who chose to set their chairs on this hill on this day. So now I think, as the Cree would say, aye, aye.